Welcome back to the Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things the Hemingway. Today we are discussing chapter 30 of Anna Karenina. Vronsky, smooth or sleazy? And will Anna give in to temptation? What are your predictions? Tekrovic said, we're still in that liminal space that Sluggy with 3 G's spoke about yesterday, and the inner turmoil of Anna is mirrored by the snowstorm raging on the train station. Anna's thoughts are quickly interrupted by the sight of her fears. Vronsky himself has followed her and is very direct in telling her of his intentions. Anna's first discussion prompt leads us to the old, age-old problem of male and female courtship / flirting etiquette. Vronsky is direct. He makes his intentions clear. Smooth or sleazy, I hate to have to use the word relative here, but it's necessary. On the one hand, given the social etiquette of the day, Vronsky is behaving abominably towards a married woman. He should respect her status as a married woman and keep his distance, or at least behave in a neutral and polite manner. On the other hand, his presence and directness is honest and apparently heartfelt. It's up to Anna to decide whether he's smooth or sleazy. It points to the complex nature of human desire and male-female relationships. His directness could be construed as aggressive and hostile to a woman. The social order of the time would tell Vronsky to keep his feelings to himself and not impose his presence upon Anna. As for the second discussion prompts, will she give in to temptation? We're 106 pages in, and I suspect we're about to be introduced to the main plot of the book. Anna's turmoil, I suggest, is about to become an order of magnitude worse. The storm isn't there for no reason. Yeah, I think you might be right about that storm. Some good old-fashioned foreshadowing. Thermos of Beer said, I wonder if Vronsky feels that he isn't doing anything wrong with Anna because of his mother's lifestyle. She apparently had her fair share of lovers, and no one seemed to mind. He might feel that acting on his impulses is the right thing to do if he grew up seeing men be successful doing this with his mother. I am Norwegian said, Vronsky, smooth or sleazy? Yes. Yes to both. Yeah, a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B. Swim said the moment fishy said, I probably would agree with that if Vronsky was an older man coming on to Anna, but he is even a bit younger than Anna, so I'm interested why you think he is both smooth and sleazy, because so far he comes across to me as somewhat inane young man grappling with unexpected emotions that he is acting on. It's also interesting that Tolstoy has not given us insight into Vronsky's inner thoughts as he has with Anna. I wonder if he will. I am Norwegian said, I mostly said yes because I think it's funny to do when someone gives you two options. But everything Vronsky has done, the initial positive first impression has made me feel like he fulfills at least some of the definition for sleazy. He's going after Anna with no regard for her marriage and few thoughts for Kitty, who he is already leading on. His social antennas are shrewd enough that I don't think ignorance is a factor here. I think he knows what he's doing and what he wants from Anna, and he's trying as hard as he can to position himself such that she will give it to him. Yeah, I thought he was his directness was pretty smooth. I think he's being a bit maybe not sleazy is not the word. He's being a bit careless. A little bit cruel, I think. There's an element of, not cruel, no, that's not the word. There's an element of, like, he knows what he's doing is wrong. It's hurtful to people. He knows he's being selfish, maybe, is the word. But at the same time, he is pretty smooth about it, I thought. The way he approached her was pretty sexy on the old Vronsky's part. Swim said the mum of fish, he said, neither smooth nor sleazy. Remember, he is no older than early to mid-20s, and not every male is a player. Of course, both Vronsky and Anna are playing out a love-at-first-sight trope. Tolstoy is carrying on also with his gothic romance motif. And Anna and Vronsky felt very Cathy and Heathcliff to me. The snowstorm may just as well be on an English moor. By the way, in America, at least, gothic romances in the late 20th century enjoyed a bit of renaissance. I consumed them by the truckload. Here is a fun article about it. I'm not going to open that. Question 2, will she give in to temptation? Well, her husband certainly comes across as a jerk and a half. What a snarky ass. So, duh. Duh. You reckon no duh? She will. No duh. Go for it. Well, I suppose is that the main conflict of the book? This relationship? Maybe it is. I hope it's not, because we're only, 10% of the way into the book. And if we've got to read 900 more pages about, a love triangle, I will kill myself. No, I don't think it will be. I think there'll be some other stuff going on. Let's read chapter 31, shall we? You can support the podcast at Patreon. Patreon.com/TheHemingwayList. For $1 a month, you can support the making of this and the upkeep of this whole thing. Chapter 31 goes like this. Vronsky did not even try to sleep that night. He sat in his place, his eyes staring straight before him, not observing the people who went in or out, and if previously his appearance of imperturbable calm had struck and annoyed those who did not know him, he now seemed to them even prouder and more self-confident. He looked at people as if they were inanimate things. A nervous young man, a law court official, who sat opposite, hated him for that look. The young man repeatedly lit his cigarette at Vronsky, talked to him, and even jostled him to prove that he was not a thing but a man. Yet Vronsky still looked at him as a street lamp, and the young man made grimaces, feeling that he was losing self-control under the stress of this refusal to regard him as human. Vronsky neither saw nor heard anyone. He felt himself a king, not because he believed that he had made an impression on Anna, he did not yet believe that, but because the impression she had made on him filled him with happiness and pride. What would come of it all, he did not know, and did not even consider. He felt that all his powers, hitherto dissipated and scattered, were now concentrated and directed with terrible energy toward one blissful aim. This made him happy. He knew only that he had told her the truth, that he would go where she went, that all the happiness of life and the only meaning of life for him now was in seeing and hearing her. When he had got out of the train at Bologoi station to drink a glass of seltzer water and had seen Anna, he had involuntarily at once told her just what he was thinking about it. He was glad he had said it to her and that she now knew it and was thinking about it. He did not sleep at all that night. When he returned to the train, he kept recalling all the positions in which he had seen her and all the words, and in his imagination, causing his heart to stand still, floated pictures of an impossible future. When he got out of the train at Petersburg, he felt, despite his sleepless night, as fresh and animated as after a cold bath. He stopped outside the carriage, waiting till she appeared. I shall see her again, he thought, and smiled involuntarily. I shall see her walk, her face. She will say something, turn her head, look at me, perhaps even smile. But before seeing her, he saw her husband, whom the station master was respectfully conducting through the crowd. Dear me, the husband. Only now did Vronsky for the first time clearly realize that the husband was connected with her. He knew she had a husband, but had not believed in his existence, and only fully believed in him when he saw him there, his head and shoulders, and the black trousers containing his legs, and especially when he saw that husband with an air of ownership quietly take her hand, when he saw Karenin, with his fresh Petersburg face, His sternly self-confident figure, his round hat and his slightly rounded back. Vronsky believed in his existence and had such a disagreeable sensation as a man tortured by thirst might feel on reaching a spring and finding a dog, sheep or pig in it, drinking the water and making it muddy. Karenin's gait, the swinging of his thighs and his wide short feet particularly offended Vronsky, who acknowledged only his own unquestionable right to love Anna. But she was still the same, and the sight of her still affected him physically, exhilarating and stimulating him and filling him with joy. He ordered his German valet, who had run up from a second-class carriage, to get his luggage and take it home, and he himself went up to her. He saw the husband and wife meet, and with the penetration of a lover he noticed the signs of slight embarrassment when she spoke to her husband. No, she doesn't and cannot love him, he decided mentally. While he was approaching her from behind, he observed, with joy, that she became aware of his approach and was about to turn, but, on recognizing him, again addressed her husband. "Did you have a good night?" he inquired, bowing toward them both, and leaving it to Karenin to take the greeting as meant for herself and to recognize him or not as he pleased. "Yes, quite comfortable, thank you," she replied. Her face seemed tired and had none of that play which showed now in a smile and now in the animation of her eyes, but just for an instant as she looked at him he saw a gleam in her eyes, and though the spark was at once extinguished, that one instant made him happy. She glanced at her husband to see whether he knew Vronsky. Karenin looked at him with displeasure, absently trying to recall who he might be. Vronsky's calm self-confidence struck like a scythe on a stone against the cold self-confidence of Karenin. "Count Vronsky," said Anna. "Ah, I believe we have met before," said Karenin, extending his hand with indifference. "You travelled there with the mother and came back with the son," he said, uttering every word distinctly as though it were something valuable he was giving away. "I suppose you are returning from furlough," he remarked, and without waiting for an answer said to his wife in his playful manner, "Well, were many tears shed in Moscow over the parting?" By addressing himself thus to his wife, he conveyed to Vronsky his wish to be alone with her, and turning to Vronsky, he touched his hat. But Vronsky, addressing Anna, said, "I hope to have the honour of calling on you." Karenin glanced at him with his weary eyes. "I shall be very pleased," he said coldly. "We are at home on Mondays." Then, having finally dismissed Vronsky, he said to his wife in his usual bantering tone, "What a good thing it was that I had just half an hour to spare to meet you and was able to show my devotion." "You insist too much on your devotion for me to value it greatly," she replied in the same playful tone, while she involuntarily listened to the sound of Vronsky's footsteps following them. "But what does he matter to me?" she asked herself, and began inquiring of her husband now how Serza had got on during her absence. "Oh, splendidly. Mariette says he was very sweet. But I am sorry to grieve you. He did not fret after you like your husband. But I must thank you once again, my dear, for having made me the present of a day." "Oh, dear, Samovar will be in ecstasies." He called the celebrated Countess Lydia Ivanovna Samovar, because she was always getting heated and boiling over about something. "She was asking after you. And do you know, if I may advise, you should go and see her today. Her heart is always aching about somebody. At present, in addition to all her other worries, she is concerned about the Oblonsky's reconciliation." Countess Lydia Ivanovna was Anna's husband's friend, and the centre of that set in Petersburg society with which Anna, through her husband, was most closely connected. "But I wrote to her." "Yes, but she wants the particulars. Go and see her, my dear, if you are not too tired. Kondraty is here with the carriage for you, and I must be off to the committee. Now I shan't have to dine alone," he went on, no longer in a bantering manner. "You can't think how I used," and with a long pressure of her hand and a special kind of smile, he helped her into the carriage. All right, there we go. Another chapter down. Have your say over on the subreddit. Other than that, thanks for listening today, and I will see you tomorrow.